The student ministry podcast you're about to hear is a lesson taught during a Wednesday night teen Bible study by Brother Kerry Schmidt. Brother Schmidt has served as an assistant pastor at Lancaster Baptist Church for over 20 years and currently serves as the director of the student ministries. For more sermon resources, please visit preaching.lancasterbaptist.org.
I want you to begin in your outline with defining the terms. I want to define some words that we just read in the Bible. And I want you to write down these definitions. First of all, the word rebel. What does this word mean that we're studying tonight? To rebel is to be contentious or continually resistant towards authority. And it particularly in the context of rebellion to God or rebellion to a father figure or a person in position of fatherly authority. So to rebel is to be contentious, to fight, to be at war. It's to continually resist authority that God has placed in your life. That's what the word rebel means. Next word, willing. Because we read in Isaiah, if ye be willing, which is sort of the opposite of rebellion. So willing is to consent to or to yield to. To be willing is to refuse to be contentious or to refuse to be continually resistant towards. So willingness flows from my heart. It's to give consent to. I consent that you're in authority over me, Mom, or you're in authority over me, Dad, or you're in authority over me, boss, or parent, or police officer, or principal, or I could go down the list of all the authorities in your life. So to be willing is to consent to or to yield to. The next word is obedient. Obedient, and that is to simply to hear and to obey. It's twofold. It's to listen and be receptive. So the vast majority of you right now are doing exactly what this word speaks of. You are hearing. You are taking notes with an open heart, an open Bible, and most of you with the intent to obey. So to be obedient is to hear and to obey. You might write this down below all of these, and this isn't on the screen, but to rebel is to literally take up arms and fight. And to submit is to lay down arms and refuse to fight. And God says in these passages, He wants us to refuse to fight the authorities that He has placed into our lives. He wants us to stop fighting. Now, I know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to 9th through 12th graders tonight, and a whole room full of you, and everybody in this room's got some authority figure, whether it's mom and dad together at home, or whether it's an aunt or an uncle that you live with, or a step-parent, or a foster parent. There's lots of different family situations in this room. But everybody has authority in your life, including me. Every adult in this room has authority in their lives. And listen, you have one of two postures coming into this room right now in your life. The state of affairs in your life is either one of resistance and fighting in general towards authority, or it's one that's characterized by submission and willingness and obedience. Now, there's not a perfectly obedient person in this room at all. So everybody in this room struggles with this to some degree. But there are no doubt many of you in this room, if I had to look at the relationship between you and your parents or you and God or you and your teachers over the last week or two or the last month, we would say this relationship is characterized by fighting. This relationship is characterized by resistance in the heart of this teenager. Now, your parents aren't perfect. I'm not a perfect parent. I blow it plenty. My wife blows it even more. Just kidding. You know, that's one of the hardest things about parenting. Honestly, I'm just going to be transparent with you guys for a minute. Is knowing how pathetically flawed I am as a parent. And yet knowing it is still right for me to expect obedience from my children. I want you guys to hear what I just said again. I am an authority figure. I am a parent. And I am pathetically flawed. I have lots of flesh that likes to rear its head up. I have lots of times where I look back and I go, man, I blew it. I have plenty of times as a parent where Lance or Larry or Haley could say, well, I shouldn't have to obey because, and they could point to one of my flaws. And I will just tell you as an authority figure, one of the most difficult parts of being an earthly authority. Now, God is a perfect authority. God is a flawless heavenly Father that is perfect in every sense. And the Word of God is a perfect authority. But your earthly authorities, your parents, your teachers, your pastors, we're flawed. And you could justify your disobedience or rebellion by our flaws. Larry could justify having a bad attitude towards me or having a resistant, fighting spirit towards me at times because he could see my flaws and say, well, you're supposed to be... And he could justify his disobedience. That's one of the hardest parts about being an authority. And you know what? You're going to be a parent one day. You're going to be an authority figure one day, and you're not going to be perfect either. But it's still going to be right for you to be the right kind of authority and to train and teach the next generation how to do right and to expect obedience from that generation. So, I ask you tonight to stop and just think, before we even dig too deeply into this, what characterizes your relationship with the authorities in your life? Could we look at it in the last 60 days and say, that relationship is characterized by resistance and fighting and, bottom line, rebellion? Or could we say it's characterized by submission? It's characterized by obedience. What is there more of between you and your mom and your dad? Is there more fighting and arguing and resistance from you to mom and dad? Or is there more giving in and submitting and obeying? Maybe you're sitting here right now and go, wow, I'm a bigger rebel than I realized. We think of the word rebel as somebody that's just outrageously wicked and sinful. You think of a rebel as somebody who probably wears their pants real low and tattoos and smoking every kind of thing and grunge and leather jacket and motorcycle. You know, he's 6 years old. When you think of rebel, you don't typically think of the one you see in the mirror. You think rebel, you think a really bad person. Can I tell you, you could look great. You could live the, you outwardly, you could totally fit the part of a godly Christian. You could appear to be doing very, very well. And you could be a rebel. You could have exceptional parents. And you could be a rebel. You could have the best of intentions. Now listen to me on this part. We think of rebels as someone with bad intentions. We think of a rebel as someone who really looks to get in trouble and really wants demerits and really wants to be suspended. Yeah, bring it on. You know, I dare you. I mean, we think of a rebel as someone just spitting in the face of authority. Do you know what God calls really a rebel? Anyone that resists authority. Anyone that argues with authority. Anyone that takes up arms and it's my will against your will. Even somebody that feels justified in their resistance. Even somebody that rationalizes, hey, wait a minute, but my mom and dad are wrong and I'm right. I have a reason to fight them because they're wrong and I'm right. No, that's rebellion. Even though you think you're justified in resisting and fighting authority, even though you can rationalize and come to the conclusion that you are right, if you are fighting authority, God-given authority in your life, you're a rebel. You are rebelling. Now, I'm not specifically accusing everybody in this room. I'm just asking you to kind of do some self-assessment. Because sometimes we think of a rebel as a real bad person, and we look at ourselves in the mirror and go, no, I'm not a rebel. And then we go right out away from the mirror and argue with our parents. Or resist somebody else in authority, and really that's rebellion. That's what it boils down to. Now, we looked at 1 Samuel chapter 15, and I didn't give you these understanding the issues, did I? Let's break it down into four statements. Number one, authority is God's universal structure. Everyone lives under authority. Everyone. We're going to see in a few minutes, this is an awesome thing. It's a wonderful thing. I don't have enough time to expound it all. We could do a 10-week series just on authority. Let me run it down for you. Authority is God's universal structure, okay? Everyone lives under authority, not just teenagers. Brother Schmidt lives under authority. Pastor Chapel lives under authority. Listen, Jesus lived under authority when he was in his earthly life. He continually said, I'm here doing the will of my Father. I am here on mission from my Heavenly Father. So Jesus modeled this for us, but everybody lives under authority. And no matter where you go in life, no matter how old you become, I can tell you the institutions of authority. God's ordained his word to be authority. God's ordained the church to be authority. God's ordained the home to be authority. And God's ordained civil government to be authority. Those are his institutions. Those are all throughout his word. He says we're going to live under a structure. We're going to live under order. And it's going to be this thing called authority. Number two, write this down. Authority is God's gift to give our lives order and structure and protection. Authority is God's gift to our lives, to give our lives order and structure and protection. The opposite of a structured, protected, well-ordered life and society is chaos, anarchy. Because there's authority, because there's a justice system, because there are sheriff's deputies and police officers and a structure of civil government, you will go home tonight and you will go to bed and you will sleep rather peacefully. Why? Because you feel safe enough. If there was no authority, if there was no accountability, if there was no structure, you'd have a hard time sleeping. Because anybody could come into your home at any time and do anything or take anything that they wanted to take. It'd be survival of the fittest, total anarchy, total chaos. So authority is God saying, I want to give structure. I want to give order. I want to give protection and safety to your life. Now, that's just one illustration that I use, the justice system, police officers. But you can take it to the nth degree of your spiritual well-being, your emotional well-being, and the stability and the foundation of your life. God has placed in your life order and structure provided through authority, and it's a gift. It's a good thing. Pretty soon, you're going to be a part of God's structure of authority in someone else's life. Right now, my wife and I are the structure, or a big part of the structure, of God's authority in Larry's life, in Haley's life, in Lance's life. But you know what? We're going to flip a coin, blink a couple times, and Larry's going to be a dad, and he's going to have 18 kids. But the fact of the matter is, hey guys, we're not here very long. You guys are growing up real fast. You're going to be parents pretty soon. You're going to be spouses pretty soon. And suddenly, you go from being more than just under authority and feeling like everybody's always on your back. You go from being under authority to being somebody's authority. And some of you are like, I can't wait, man. I'm going to boss my kids around. Can't wait. Payback time. You're going to be someone's authority, and you're going to be God's gift to them to provide their lives with order and structure and protection. So how you treat authority and how you view authority and how you think of authority is determining what kind of authority you're going to be. And if all you do is fight and wrestle and resist authority, if you're a rebel, you're blowing it. You're not practicing to become the right kind of authority in someone else's life someday. Number three, write this down. This is important. This one's big. I think this is one of the biggest statements in the whole Bible study tonight. Biblical authority is one of the greatest expressions of love that is known in life. The exercise of biblical authority is one of the greatest expressions of love that anybody could ever put into your life. I'm going to say that again. I want you to hear it, because everybody in this room wants to be loved. Everybody likes to go to bed knowing, I'm loved. Somebody loves me. Somebody cares about me. The exercise of biblical authority in your life is one of the greatest expressions of love that somebody else could put into you. Why? How does that make sense? Because I know when I'm 16, 17, I don't think anybody even said that to me. I don't know that I could have comprehended it just by that statement. So let me explain it to you. To exercise or to be in authority is a huge responsibility. It is a grave responsibility. It is a sobering, scary responsibility. In all honesty, I would rather not be anybody's authority. Because you know what that means? If I wasn't anybody's authority, then I'm not responsible for being someone else's protection or stability or security or order. I'm not responsible to be that authority. Being authoritative or being biblical authority in someone's life is a huge responsibility. There is no greater responsibility on my shoulders than to be the authority for my family. Because God put me in a position of authority to protect my family, before physically, spiritually. If Satan is going to get to my wife or kids, he's got to come through me. That's how God's structure of authority is stacked. And even Satan has to work in God's authority structure. It is a huge responsibility to be an authority figure. To exercise that authority is to say, I care about you. I love you so much that I will take the responsibility of providing protection and care and structure and order in your life. I will take that upon my shoulders and all the burden that comes with it, and I will bear that burden, and I am willing ultimately to answer to God for how I exercised the authority that He gave to me over your life. Now, guys, I'm telling you right now, that is a major expression of love. That is a major expression of love. Let me give you another illustration. Isaac, come up here for just a minute, if you would. Walk up here and stand next to me. Let's say that Isaac, as a member of our church youth group and as a student in our school who's grown up here, let's say that Isaac, it comes to my attention as one of the youth pastors, that Isaac has been... So let's say that Isaac has gotten into some depression lately and discouragement. And he started listening to bad music and started wandering down the wrong path. And pretty soon he got connected with the wrong people and they started giving him drugs. And he started smoking pot and he's been addicted to smoking pot. Now he's selling it. And that comes to my attention. That comes to my attention. Now, I have two things I can do, guys. That's not my life. That's not my kid. Him smoking pot doesn't affect me at all. I could go to bed tonight, sleep a long night, wake up tomorrow, enjoy my day. I could hear about it and decide never to think of it again. Doesn't touch my life at all. He's not a member of my family. He doesn't live in my neighborhood. I could say, I don't care. I could say, I don't need to love that kid. I don't need to care about that. I don't need to involve myself in that. Why take the burden? Why give a rip? That's his life. I'm living my life. That's not love. If it came to my attention that Isaac was doing drugs, there's something in my heart that feels a responsibility towards Isaac and a responsibility for Isaac. And if I am a spiritual authority in his life, if I've been delegated some measure of authority by God in his life, to go to him, to approach him, to talk to him, to dig into that problem. Now, you guys, all you ever see is about 0.5 millimeter below the surface. All as deep as it ever gets in the mind of most teenagers is, oh, he's busted, he got caught. Now he's in trouble, now he's grounded. Now all the people are upset at him. I mean, man, his parents are going to be mad at him. Brother Smith's mad at him. He's in big trouble. That is so shallow. That is so idiotic to think of it in those terms. Because the reality of it is, he's got a future that's at stake now. Pot will ruin his life and wreck his chances of a happy marriage, and wreck his chances of a happy home, and raise, and being a great parent, and having a decent job, and a career, and having a life that honors the Lord, or that is favored by God in any sense. It's all on the line now. Who cares if he gets suspended, or expelled, or caught? That's irrelevant. The real issue is, his whole future is at stake. Now, if I didn't have to be an authority in his life, I could say, well, not, who cares? It's your life, man. Smoke it away if you want to. I'm going to go live my life. I could go to the beach tomorrow with my wife. I could go do my thing. If I found out that Isaac was smoking pot tonight, it would take my whole day tomorrow. Tomorrow's my day off. I got stuff I'm going to do with my wife. I got stuff I'm doing around the house. I'm making plans. I'm going to get some rest. I'm going to tomorrow's my day. I'm looking forward to it. But if I found out that Isaac was smoking dope, it would take my whole day. I would, all day tomorrow, I'd be with Isaac. I'd be with his parents. We'd be counseling. We'd be wiping tears. We'd be drying tears. We'd be praying and making things right. We'd be trying to teach Isaac about why not to do that and how to get drawn into it and how can we rebuild this? How can we repair this? Yeah, why? Because I'm one of his spiritual authorities and love would compel me to exercise authority. You think authority is just, you're caught, you're busted, you're grounded. That's not authority. That's the surface. That's the least desirable position or exercise of authority. The real exercise of authority is I've got to dig into this situation and care and help and love. Why? Because that's what God's put me in his life to help with. You can be seated. So guys, when I say that the exercise of biblical authority is one of the greatest expressions of love known in life, it is. You know why? Somebody comes up to you and says, hey, stop doing that. You know what they're saying? I care about you. Somebody gets in your face about something. Somebody reprimands you for something. You know what they're saying? I care about you. I love you. Too much not to say something. I want you to think about the last person that got onto your case about anything. Why do they care? Why would they care? You think really the world is made up of adults that just go around going, I want to find a teenager so I can jump on them about something. That's not how we operate. We love you. The only reason anybody would get on your case about anything, lecture you, argue with you, the only reason your parents would put up with your fight is because they love you. And they're willing to fight you for you. They're willing to stand in the gap for you to try to protect you and to bring safety and protection and care and love to your life. And lastly, write this down. God promises blessing. God promises blessing to those who live within authority. God promises blessing to those who live within authority. Now, very quickly, point number one, the profile of a rebellious Christian. One of the best examples in all of the Bible of rebellion is what we read about a moment ago in 1 Samuel 15. And we won't go back to the scripture because we read about it at the opening, but here's the story in a nutshell. Saul was given specific instructions by God as the king. You guys with me? Saul was given specific instructions to go and conquer the Amalekites and to wipe them out and to kill everything and every animal and everybody, to wipe them all out. That was God's set of instructions. Now, Saul was prideful in his heart, and his arrogance and his pride got in the way, and he got out of the battle. Now listen, mark this down. Saul was a rebel, but he didn't have a bad heart towards God. He actually loved God, was trying to obey God, and was trying to worship God, but he was doing it in a very prideful way. He was deciding to go against the command of God so he could worship God his own way. So he left the king, some of the best of the animals and the best things. He left it all alive, killed most everybody, but brought back this show. And when he was confronted about it by Samuel, he said, I did obey the Lord. I've just brought these back to offer as a sacrifice to God. Listen. God says, Saul brought these back to bring it to, I just want to worship God. Here's how he shrouded his rebellion. He reasoned it away. He rationalized it away. I'm going to disobey and rebel against God, but I'm going to do it for really good reasons because I know God loves sacrifice. I know God loves to be worshipped. So God probably didn't really mean to wipe everybody out and to kill every animal. He would probably, if he was given a chance to reconsider, he'd probably say, yeah, bring the best ones back and offer them as a sacrifice. And Samuel came to that verse we read and he said, to obey is better than sacrifice. Samuel said, Saul, in your pride, you rebelled. Even though you rationalized it, even though you did it for good reasons, you rebelled. So the profile of a rebellious Christian we see in Saul, a man who rationalized and even came up with a good reason why he should rebel. All of you are good at that. All of my kids have been good at that growing up, especially when they were little. You know, we could say, don't take any of these cookies. And Haley, she would figure out a way to get the cookies and eat them and bring them and say, I wanted you to have one too. No, she's rebelling, and she's covering her rebellion with this shroud of sincerity and this artificial, you know, she just disobeyed. Doesn't matter if she loves me, if she's trying to please me, if she wants me to have a cookie too. And that's what we do. We rationalize and reason away, and we look in the mirror and go, I'm not a rebel. And really, when it boils down to it, when we're arguing and fighting and resisting, we are. Point number two, write this down, the profile of a submissive Christian. I want you to see one thing. Go over 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is two chapters after Saul's rebellion. The profile of a submissive Christian, we're going to see David. And I want you to have one takeaway here, real quick. 1 Samuel 17. And look at verse 17. 1 Samuel 17. And look at verse 17. And Jesse, that's David's dad, said unto David, his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captives of their 1,000. Look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Verse 20, read it out loud with me. Ready, go. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. Now look at it again. Look at verse 20. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as what? Jesse had what? Commanded him. Here it is. This is the great slaughter of Goliath. This is one of the great stories of the Bible. You've heard it since you were 2. You've heard it since you were in your mother's womb, most of you. We know what's going to happen. David's going to the battle. He's going to hear Goliath. He's going to go get 5 stones. He's going to say, there's not a cause. He's going to run out there. He's going to get confronted by Goliath. He's going to spin the stone, brains everywhere, head cut off. Hey, David's a hero. Goliath's dead. Everybody wins. Everybody's happy. You know the story, right? Why did that story even happen? Because David obeyed his dad. It's right there in verse 20. Now, I'm going to tell you, if there's ever a kid that had a reason to disobey his dad, it was David. He had the worst job in the whole family, scooping sheep poop. He had the worst job. Nobody respected shepherds. What's even worse, when he went, he left the sheep with a keeper. So this could have been anybody's job. David had the worst job. He was the youngest. His brothers get to go off to the glorious battle. He could have complained. He could have argued. He could have fussed. He could have fought with his dad. But you know what he did? He had a heart of submission and surrender. And he determined, I'm going to be the best shepherd I can be. And when my dad needs me to do something else, like deliver food to my brothers, I'll just wake up and do what my dad says. And on this particular day, little did he know, it was going to be one of the greatest days of his life. He woke up on this day planning to scoop a little more poop and hang around the hillsides watching sheep, probably write a poem or two. And his dad said, hey, David, I need you to do something else today. Go deliver the cheese. And he just did what his dad said. It turned out to be the greatest day of his life. Gets to save the whole nation. Gets to become the world's greatest hero of Israel. Why did that happen? Because he was a submissive son. Now, let's fill in the blanks here. Let's go back to number 1, because I didn't give you the blanks, did I? Saul was filled with pride in his own understanding. He was filled with pride. Saul's pride caused him to rationalize his rebellion. So he rationalized. I already said that. Saul then faced the consequences of a rebellious heart. And you can study his life, but his life began to come unraveled from that point forward. Let's look at David now. David had the least desirable of positions in life. You couldn't get much lower than a shepherd. Secondly, David had a heart to honor and obey his father. He just woke up every day going, okay, I'll just do what I'm told to do. I'll just obey. Number 3, David's obedience led to his greatest blessings. His simple obedience led to his greatest blessings. Now, Look at the verses in your outline. Go down to Romans 13, 1 and 2. It's the last verse in your outline. And read the first sentence to the first period out loud. Ready, go. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. Hey, listen. I could have come in here and said, Ephesians 6, children, obey your parents. You've heard that? We could have stood together and sang the song, obedience is the very best way. You guys know that song, right? Let me tell you why I didn't do that. Look up here. Number one, you're closer to being adults than you are children. I know some people still call you children, but you're much closer to adulthood than you are childhood. But I want you to see that it's bigger than just children obey your parents. It's much bigger than children obey your parents. It's so big that Romans 13 says, let every soul, that's every soul, be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. So when you resist the powers that God has placed in your life, you resist God. Your rebellion is ultimately rebellion against God. You think you're just fighting your parents or you're just fighting your teacher. You're really fighting God. Now, I want you to see this. Three basic responses towards authority, and we're going to wrap it up. You can obey outwardly and dishonor inwardly. So, all right, I'll do what I'm told, but I'm not happy about it. Secondly, you could obey outwardly while honoring inwardly. In other words, I will obey with a good heart. I will obey as a product of a surrendered heart. Thirdly, you could disobey outwardly while rebelling inwardly. So, obviously, the middle one is the right one there. And let me give you some key statements. I want you to write these down. Number one, rebellion fuels itself on a prideful heart that believes or falls for lies. Rebellion comes from pride, and I'm believing lies. Why would you fight your parents? Why would you fight your parents? Because you think you know better. Because you think they're wrong. Because you think you know more. And that's a lie. You're believing lies. And pride has risen up and told you, you know better than your parents. You are smarter than them. They don't understand you. And that's a lie. So rebellion falls for lies or fuels itself on a prideful heart that falls for lies. Next, obedience flows from a humble heart that desires to know the truth. Obedience says, hey, mom and dad, help me understand this. I know you don't want me to like that boy or that girl. I know you don't want me to go here or do this. And I don't understand that. So help me understand it. Teach me. Help me to grow. I want to obey you, but I want to obey you from a right heart. So I want to learn and I want to grow in wisdom. I want to learn from authority. Obedience from a humble heart. Next, your whole life will be blessed in direct proportion to one of two general postures towards authority, resistance or submission. Your whole life. I'm telling you, the rebels in this room will make less money than those that know how to honor authority. Everything about your life will flow out of either a spirit of resistance or a spirit of submission. Very quickly, by way of conclusion, write these things down. Four ways that you can honor authority. Four ways, real quick, and then I've got a closing illustration and we're done. Number one, you can obey those in authority. Number one, you can obey. Number two, you can appreciate those in authority. How long has it been since you wrote your parents a thank you note? Some of you need to stop fighting and start saying thank you. Some of you wake up and from morning to evening, you want to yell and fight and resist the people that are putting food in your mouth and clothes on your back and giving you a place to live. And you want to fight those people and you need to thank them. And some of you need to go to them right now tonight when we're done and hug them and say, I'm sorry, I've had a spirit of rebellion. You can obey, you can appreciate, you can encourage. You can encourage. Did it ever occur to you that your authorities are people? And they get discouraged just like you do? And they have burdens just like you do? And for you to come along and put your arm around them or hug them and say, hey, I love you and I'm praying for you. Whoa! That's a great way to honor authority. And finally, you can pray for those in authority. because they do carry some heavy burdens for you and because of you. Can I borrow a pocket knife real quick? All right, I need Curtis Shannon. Where you at? Curtis, come up here. Curtis, you mind taking your shoes off for a minute? All right, I need somebody's necktie or a piece of cloth. Or here you go, Morgan. Let me borrow your necktie. All right, I'm going to. Curtis, how you doing, man? Doing okay? All right, I'm going to blindfold you here real quick, okay? I want to make sure that you can't see, okay? Can you see anything? You sure? Okay, stand this way right here. All right, Curtis, I am taking this knife and I'm laying it sharp side up on the platform that you're standing on, okay? And I want you to walk across the platform without stepping on the knife. Can you see anything?
No.
Okay, so go ahead and walk. It's there. It's really there, so be careful. Okay, stop. Do you want to do this?
No.
No. You really don't want to do this, do you? Should Curtis do this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. These people are sadistic. They want you to cut your foot. It's very stupid for Curtis to try to do this. Okay. Anybody that loves Curtis would not want him to walk across this platform right now because there's a very sharp knife. There's a very sharp knife that Kenan bought illegally on the black market from some Iranian arms dealer sitting on this platform right now, sharp side up. And boy, if Curtis came down on that, we'd be at the ER putting some stitches in his foot, I'm sure. So Curtis does not want to make this journey. Okay, now watch. Is he susceptible? Is he in danger? Is he vulnerable? Yes. Here's what authority does. Watch. Authority comes and stands between him and the danger and says, Curtis, listen, there's something right down here that you can't step on, okay, because it's going to hurt you. So I'm going to help you, okay? If you'll do what I tell you to do, you will not step on this, okay? All right, so here we go. Are you going to listen to me? So you're not going to fight me. You're not going to argue with me. You're just going to do what I say. Mm-hmm. Do you trust me? Mm-hmm. Do you know I love you? Mm-hmm. You know I don't want you to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Okay. So take a step. Just keep walking forward here. Just keep walking forward. Okay. Now stop. Okay. Now move this way about a foot. Okay. Now step down. Okay. You're good, Curtis. You can take your blindfold off. Did Curtis make it safely across the platform? Why did he make it safely across the platform? Because he was willing and obedient to somebody who loved him. He was willing to submit to authority. Now, as much as you want to be convinced, as much as you want to be convinced that you know everything about life, as much as you want to be convinced that your parents are not as smart as you, that is exactly what you need to do with those in authority in your life. You need to recognize they are there to protect you from things you don't see, and you need to yield and let them guide you. Because there'll be a time where they'll release you and you'll be somebody else's authority. And it's your responsibility then to guide them through things that they can't see. Let's have our heads bowed and our eyes closed.
Thank you for listening to this Student Ministry 127 podcast. For more sermon resources, visit preaching.lancasterbaptist.org. And for information about West Coast Baptist College, visit wcbc.edu.